Good evening, everybody.
Hello,
and welcome to our irregular Tuesday stream. Although it seems to be regular on a Tuesday, because that seems to be one of the better days to do it. Yes, we are indeed back.
Yes.
Weather's still good. For those of you who tune in for the weather report, there hasn't been much to report. It's been warm, it's been slightly less warm, and it's kind of been nice.
Hooray. I even have a tan.
Oh, Evelyn even has a slight tan.
Yes. And I'm Scottish, so it tells you it's been somewhat warm.
Don't worry, it's not Minstrel Villain.
No.
We've not got Minstrel Villain arriving.
I've not decided to go scouse on everyone.
No, she's not completely fake tanned, oranged up. He is not the spray tan monster.
If you are someone who watches these streams regularly and wants to support them because you think they are like funny or entertaining or informative or whatever, really, you can choose to give us monies via the Ko-Fi directly, or you can do it via YouTube as a super chat, or become a channel member, or subscribe to the Substack, or
we're still
maybe
fully monetized,
even possibly
yes.
Consider buying a book.
Yes, we do indeed still have book. Although we will at some point hopefully have next book. We will see. For next book is a lot of work.
But... my book. And then wait,
unfortunately, just Evelyn there having eaten a large amount of rice. Don't you start yawning during the intro. You'll get the... it's behind energy. We're doing sensationalism. Sensationalize yourself up.
I'm tired of all this sensationalism.
I'm tired of all this sensationalism. I don't want things to be sensational anymore. I just want them to be normal. But yes, in case you were wondering, today's topic is, in all its forms, sensationalism. But mostly how sensationalism really hasn't altered that much. It's morphed in terms of how it's used in the news cycle, but we've been seeing the same kind of tricks and the same kind of leading people around in circles using news narratives and media narratives for 60 years, 70 years, really since the inception of radio.
Yes.
It's been developing in this sense, but we have now the modern, fully evolved form of sensationalism.
Well, I just think it's a great point whereby the confluence of so many things that we have discussed over the last, three, 4 years now, it all becomes apparent that what people are doing is they're being sensationalist about things, and this creates a cycle whereby all your citizen journalists, your independent reporters, your people that work at your non-mainstream media outlets, who are, for the most part, backed by the same money anyway, in their little decentralized fashion to try and get closer to the truth, follow this sort of pattern of sensationalism and end up just repeating the narratives put forward by counterinsurgency operatives.
Well, it's also that we speak counter to the narrative. As if it's your first time here, oh dear. But no, if it's your first time here, we're very big on not red-pilling normies. The normies can stay where they are. I don't want a boat full of silly normal people who don't know anything about anything. Maybe they should be doing the things they know things about rather than pretending to know things about politics.
Mm.
And I think following the sensationalism, though, going for the loudest thing, the impulse to quote-unquote red-pill the normies really gets people swept up, even if they don't think that they're susceptible to that in a conscious sense. We always talk about it, it's a political background music, and when it becomes sensationalized, it becomes a political foreground music. And as it becomes the foreground, people feel they need to comment on it and attach themselves to it. The more sensational the story, the harder time people have not interacting with it.
Yes, I think we could just get into an example of this straight away. This is a story that, and to be fair, this is not something we really tend to do. This is still technically a developing narrative.
Yes.
We are not going to comment on what has or hasn't happened definite here. But what we can see is that the timeline of events since last weekend, they have gone from discussing this as an elder sort of woman who had cultural significance that sadly passed away. But by bombarding people with this as a story day after day after day, and we can maybe in future look at the exact details and who did do this and who didn't and who was involved and who wasn't and what motives they had, the fact that people from our little sphere of the internet feel the need to spend 3 or 4 days in a row speculating about this and going to the lengths of suggesting things like hope not hate inspired Anne Widdecombe's murder. I'm sorry, but I don't think hope not hate actually deserves that level of credit. I think the most likely circumstance here is that someone's just a nutter. And this is the same thing we've talked about with or radical Islam and the sort of fugazi that we play with, sort of Schrodinger's Islamist. That on one hand, these people are disorganized and useless. They're a burden to us. But on the other hand, they're somehow a tight-knit military force waiting to take over at any moment.
Yeah, we'll get into that in more detail. No, and neither are the left, in quotes, either. What we have here really is the utility of the evolving sensational story. People will ask me with a straight face, how does it benefit the establishment constantly pushing stories that are then immediately proven wrong? How does it, you know, a lot of people think that when the story changes, it quote unquote shatters the narrative and wakes people up. But what really it does is it gives people another shot to be attached to the story in some way.
Yes.
And a lot of people are become attached to previous versions of stories. Day by day, a different, slightly more or slightly less sensationalist version of the story has come out. At first, it was recognizable celebrity and former politician dies. Then it was former politician and beloved, you know, celebrity possibly murdered.
Yes, and then someone was arrested.
Yeah,
then that person was released the day after.
And we got the
Then we were told not to speculate.
Yeah, yeah.
And not to jump to conclusions.
And then we were told it was a home invasion gone wrong, you know, a burglary gone wrong. And we had all of these different versions. We had people speculating about, like, migrant crime and countryside crime. We've already had many narratives about this. We'll zoom in a couple of them that have come up in a little bit, because they really show how narrative control through, especially sensational stories, works.
Mm.
The louder the story, the easier it is to attach people to the narrative, and the more it cuts. We've learned that. We do things that are, and say things really that are, from a certain point of view, at least in wording, slightly outrageous. But really, it being slightly outrageous, being slightly sensational, is the only way to cut through. We do engage in our own kind of, I don't say, and we are our own form of sensationalism about sensationalism. But
we are missing a link in here, though, which is important to get into off the back of this.
Oh, what is that?
So maybe we can slide it in after the next Guardian one.
Yeah, which one is it?
So give me a second. I've got the... If we do have, I'm not sure where the order is of it, so I would much rather we...
They're all in order. This is exactly the same thing, that you also have competing narratives.
Mm.
The same day this happened, you had the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, i.e. the kind of special forces and military forces of the Iranian state, being not proscribed, but the UK has banned support, which is confusing, because it's not prescription, because it doesn't really fit, but support was banned. This happened the same day they announced...
No, just the same day. I think it's worth mentioning the fact...
That the same minute, basically.
Yeah, at the same minute, BBC's breaking news had counter-terror police involving themselves in what's happened with Anne Widdecombe. But then at the same period, they've got these stories up on the front. So they're just expecting you to sort of join the dots, really, aren't they? And in, what happens in...
You've already got that one.
I don't know, but I'm saying where in
it's
the order.
It's here.
I was going to say it probably fits, actually.
It's when we talk about all the other ones saying exactly the same thing.
Okay, fair enough. Right. No, but what you have is this sort of open space whereby everyone is left to draw their own conclusions about the fact that this group of people that we are at war with is that we are now even more at war with them than we were before. And then at the same time, we have Anne Widdecombe's tragic death is now a counter-terror incident. We are meant to believe that obviously these things aren't linked, and they will tell you that these things aren't linked, but you're obviously meant to experience them psychologically and emotionally at the same time.
But it's also just the speculation, it was all things to all men. This has been all things to all men. It's been people talking about the right has politically seen, and people have become immersed in the minutia of it already. They're already going, see, it wasn't, they said it wasn't a political murder, and but it was a political murder, and that's bad. And people go, oh, no, we just said that speculation isn't helpful, which it isn't. And then all this, all that will come up, it's exactly the same thing that happens. A lot of people get extreme psychic pain from being exposed to this, but everyone who was like, I was really affected by the death of Charlie Kirk. I will never forget Charlie. I will never forget Knife and Axe Girl. We, Anne Widdecombe is our hill to die on.
I thought it was Henry Nowak. Yeah, I thought it was whatever other event that's happened up until this point.
That poor, like, maybe council guy who was stabbed.
Yeah.
I can't remember the guy's
name. Wayne, whatever. I mean, this is not to sound insincere. This is not to sound that we don't think of these events as tragedies. Of course they are, but that doesn't need to be stated.
No.
And what we don't need to do is put our foot down every week, like, I don't know, battered bloody women. And so, no, he'll change this week, I promise. And this will never happen again as you start, you know, covering up your next black eye. I actually want to say this as a sort of piece of personal advice to individuals who listen to this stuff, some of whom we have met and we know quite well. Just don't engage with this stuff. You don't have to. You are not obligated to get up there and do your cargo cult bloody sign of solidarity with Anne Widdecombe or whoever else. If it means something to you, it means something to you. You don't have to show everyone else that it means something to you. You don't have to make your screen black for George Floyd, because that's what you people are doing. And I physically can't grasp why people willingly choose to engage with this stuff, because it obviously has some sort of effect on them mentally. I see the patterns and the behaviours of people I know and what they post. And at the same time this is going on, you've got them sharing just utter lowest common denominator garbage about the far left and the foreigners and the trannies and the this and the that. And it's like, well, do you feel better for it? I bet you don't. Well, go and do something else with your bloody time.
It's in there, but we'll cover that Rupert Lowe tweet in a little bit. Because I don't want to talk too much about Rupert Lowe. But the other end of this process is what I'm referring to as the serious hat here. In that when it comes time for things to be real and recognised and legitimate, as I went to a legitimacy stream, a very good example of that has been, well, the coronation of Andy Burnham, let's say. And we're not going to talk too much about this. It doesn't really mean anything. The bureaucracy in this country is hemmed into such a degree that what you will get is a few desperate token policies on top of what not only will but has to be the status quo. The status quo in this country, from the elite's point of view, is incredibly fragile, and they do not have any wiggle room. We are stuck on a set managerial course with long planning horizons and rotating the evil wizard Keir Starmer out of visible view doesn't actually do anything. But what it does is it allows them to engage in this process of not only kind of slightly sensationalizing the events themselves and making them appear more important, but it really allows them to direct the whole circus. You have this entire narrative, these competing news narratives, where there's people now talking about the Widdecombe thing, there's people now talking about the Burnham thing, but really, what you've got is eking out time. You've got things that must appear to happen. The reason things get louder and news cycles get shorter measurably and things get more and more sensational is it takes more and more political and media energy to make people do things, to experience things. And so we have gone from 11 to, you know, to we are at settings that we thought were 9 impossible, and yet nothing really continues to change. And that, by the way, the Manchester Evening News is owned by a former head of Prudential who was an advisor to George Osborne. People don't understand the power of the boring people in the background. He was considered a bit of a political person, but down the middle Cameronism is where all this leads. Starmerism. If you wonder how the political compromise happens, we've talked about it before, what you get are two competing sensational narratives that cancel each other out and add up to the status quo. That is really what happened. But you, all of this demonstrates one of our previous principles, and we've tried to hammer that into people, is that the power of the elite is in their framing. You have the most embarrassing one, I think, was the helicopter shots of Burnham's train to London. But you had a whole ecosystem of people reacting to this as bait.
Yes.
This did a lot of things now do double duty. The left does double duty, but these hyper-real events where you have Sky News and BBC News hyperventilating over Andy Burnham because they have to make him look prime ministerial. They have to make him look like...
Live newscopter!
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God.
They have to make him look like he's in power.
Yeah.
They have to add this air of legitimacy. And so not only people interacting with and seeing this coverage of it's real is important, but people reacting to it and going, I can't believe they put wall-to-wall coverage of Andy Burnham's... I can believe it.
Yes, do you know what?
Of course that's what's on the news.
They do this.
This doesn't even register.
But they did this for the same reason there was pageantry and ceremony and the nonsense about that guy breaking into the casket during the Queen's death.
Yes.
Because ultimately, they had to create the illusion in your mind that her dying was going to change anything.
Yes. And the illusion,
fundamentally, it never was.
And the illusion has to be created within your mind here that Andy Burnham becoming Prime Minister will change something, when in fact, it will not. And there has to be an idea put in your mind here the death of Anne Widdecombe and the reaction to it will change something, when the sad reality is it will not. And we say this every time, and we get slightly more stringent every time, and people, I will say, shout slightly less every time, because I think really they realise that we're right, but this will not change anything. Your reaction to it will not change anything. You're getting angry about it will not change anything. There's a few people who... me included, who interacted with Anne Widdecombe during her twilight years a little bit. I didn't know her. I had online and, you know, behind, you know, private online, but online interactions, Zoom talks, really. But there's a huge parasocial aspect to this. There are people who interact with her very lightly who are now running around who say that they are, you know, acting like they were a best friend. Or there's people who have never interacted with her at all who feel like they are part of some sort of movement or solidarity with her, when really she was just a slightly confused old woman who didn't understand her time in politics and freely admitted it. She just, you know, she just, well, I heard from Anne Widdecombe is that she never felt like she was part of the process at all, which I thought was very honest, actually quite maybe quite like her. But it won't change anything. And getting angry about it and getting hyped up with the sensationalization of it, with the titillating, they're breathlessly going over number of hammer blows, you know. It's become true crime. It's a true crime podcast. And a true crime podcast can be handled. It is... We've gone this far without using the term hyper-reality.
It's about hope, not hate. It's about the far left. It's about the enemies of civilization, because they want you to stand hand in hand with Zionists and neocons and people who hate you so that they can pretend that you share an enemy in this fugazi of the far left.
There it is. Because to be fair, there's almost like a meta commentary here from The Guardian, like priming people about how they're going to get sick of this coming news cycle about Andy Burnham. Welcome to the Andy Burnham Show, the Westminster frenzy, sucking up the British media's attention. This is, of course, a choice.
Yeah, I mean, despite Friday's awful rail crash, it was the PM in waiting's journey from Manchester to London that dominated the headlines.
This is
why? Why did it dominate the headlines? Because you people chose to put it there.
Yeah, yeah. It's this self-fulfilling... We often tell you that bottom-up thinking is the ultimate form of cancer, if you want to think politically. This is almost like a wink and a nod. This is almost them... this is why I put it in. This is them doing our work for us. Despite an awful rail crash, the media thought it was their responsibility to smear Burnham posters all over the decline of Britain. That is the utility of... I can believe they followed Andy Burnham's train all the way to London, because what else are they going to focus on? It's the infrastructure falling apart. It's rubbish in the streets. It's dysfunction. It's everything that is slow and grinding and is reality to people. And that's how this all works. And it's not good enough just to point it out.
No, and I actually think in a certain respect, before we get into a sort of a different point here, I've come round to the opinion now where I believe the decentralized nature of news aggregation on social media done by people who we know personally is a worse plague to the informational environment we exist in than people like these Guardian journalists. I genuinely believe that the unconstructed and unorganized nature of all these different people who are engaging in part-time news aggregation are more likely to be swayed by the biases and the fundamental sort of incentives that the elites that be have than someone else who is a minor elite as a consequence of controlling a larger media company.
Thank you there, RA8784. Who else came from Panama Hat and Simon Stream? If they handed over to us, thank you very much. And do go check out Panama Hat and Simon Roberts, for they are very good.
Yes.
And we do collaborate with both of them occasionally.
But I think people really need to take a massive step back. You need to stop getting information you use to judge the world around you from people on Twitter. Even though they're good people and you trust them, they aren't getting it from anywhere else other than Twitter too. And what we have is a feedback loop whereby on occasions where we can identify the sort of centrality and density of it, you find people that look like spooks and feds.
Well, it's also just the idea of the peer journalist hasn't worked, really. It was a libertarian dream to bypass mainstream media by just doing news ourselves. But if you look at the work of a few self-initiated individuals in their spare time, it does not add up to the detail that even a slightly malicious news organization can muster.
Nor do they have the ability as an individual to create a coherent narrative.
Yes.
And I think that's fundamentally what's going on here. It's that all these people that ask about it and talk about Sian Widdecombe online, all they do is create consent sort of manufacturing, if you could go on to one we've got next, for what is ultimately the elites in power pulling up their ranks and going, actually, the result of Anne Widdecombe being murdered is that we now need future protection for more MPs. So now this sensationalist nonsense from Nigel Farage getting milkshaked and it could have had concrete in it, and Sargon getting hit with a fish or whatever it was.
I feel like this should just flash on and off over
all of
this.
All of this builds up to people who are MPs or people who are speaking on the behalf of MPs going, we need more protection for us. We need state-funded security that we already don't somehow have. We need safe houses and all this other crap.
Here's all the ends of the narrative plugging into one thing. Here's Rupert Lowe talking about the fact that MPs need more security.
Yes.
MPs like him.
And it is you, the viewer, you, the listener, who engages with this stuff online and signal boosts it and gives it that network effect. It is you that has allowed this sort of message to come forward off the back of this. And people aren't turning around going, what?
The power of the elites is not in their control of events, but in their control of the framing of events. Here we have the framing happening in real time. Greens leader, a news call for Esher security after Anne Widdecombe death. MI5 advises vulnerable MPs to build a safe room at home.
And but you know what's happening at the exact same time these stories are coming out? You have people we know running around on Twitter going, well, why didn't the police do a good enough job? So we have a point there why the need to be sensationalist creates an agreement point where both the establishment and these people who are anti-establishment all think that MPs need better security and the police should have done a better job.
Do you remember
now,
when...
I'm not going to suggest that the police have been incompetent because, let's be honest, if she was hit in the head with a hammer 21 times in a dining room or whatever, I think that would have been very apparent. So whoever's been on the scene has obviously known what's happened straight away, if that is the story that's happened. So it's not because they've tried to lie to you.
It's just because
because this has extended this narrative out for a week and a half.
Yes.
By drip feeding it to you, by giving you the limited hangout.
It's also just sometimes you'll have an incident happen, it will take months. Actually months of evidence gathering and people being quiet because something has actually happened. I think the quick flip-flop narrative of this is actually a sign that they don't care about it that much. This is not that serious to them. And they're using it as a media event more than they are concerned about it. Hmm. But also this, do you remember when we were doing the streams about, you know, the cultural nationalism, the MI5 documents, the Who Watches the Watchmen, and we came across all that stuff by Joe Cox's husband, when they wheeled out Joe Cox's widower and said...
Who wrote a statement in was it Guardian or one of the papers about this literally last week? It was Brendan Cox. So we had the elites demonstrating the fact that far left and far right, we're meant to be told that Brendan Cox loves integration, he loves immigrants, he's a far left individual. We're told that Anne Widdecombe's is a bigoted far right individual, and here we are, the elites shaking hands over the fact that, well, this shouldn't happen.
Yes, and what you really have is they want more security for every Cyril Smith.
Yep.
This will make it easier. This is taxpayer funded security for a group of people who are Peter Mandelson.
Mm.
You are bolstering a narrative that not only includes the Joe Cox narrative, which has already been used by the security services to target you. It is the basis of their whole cultural nationalism definition that if you even believe that English culture isn't a threat, you're a terrorist.
Mm.
And everything to the right in quotes of that, and everything that's basically around that. But you'd have a narrative that ends with more security for elite paedophiles. It's what it is. It's we need to protect the Westminster nonces better.
I mean, I can even see it. You've got one from the BBC up here, and it's Zaya Yusuf.
Yeah.
Reform UK proposes £100 million round-the-clock security plan for MPs. And then what have we got to the right of that? Andy Burnham tells Cabinet to tackle living costs at first meeting. So now what that's going to tell you is that it's left-wing and it's smelly and it's Andy Burnham to care about living costs, because he's doing that in his opposition to the defence of us as the elite class of MPs. But we're going to get you, Joe Bloggs, off the street to argue for us on that behalf. Because it's just you're in that constant kayfabe theatre of thinking that factionalism matters at that low level.
The
does it hell?
End of somebody else's wedge. You got mad because a former MP that you quite like appears to have been murdered. And so you've run around like a headless chicken, creating political energy, which is then picked up by your political opponents. You have a union of voices from Rupert Lowe through Reform and Zaya Yusuf, all those people, through the Greens, through the BBC, through the Joe Cox, MI5, counter-terrorism nexus, all of that stuff. You have this voice in unison going, we need more security for the political elite class. The political elite class had more of your money spent on keeping them safe. And that's the upshot of it. That's where all of this has gone, because you don't control the reaction to events. They do.
Yes.
And running around in a cargo cult sense like you do control the reaction to events is not only stupid, it's dangerous. And in fact, as the online realm becomes more and more and more of the political conversation, it becomes easier and easier and easier to get these self-initiated people riled up to run around like headless chickens and create energy for the narratives that otherwise you wouldn't be able to create energy for.
But don't you understand? Anne Widdecombe's the next Charlie Kirk. We can't allow her to have died for nothing, so we need another £100 million budget to make sure that no one can throw eggs at Kemi Badenoch.
Well, it's not MP security. There's a reason it was Anne Widdecombe, who is irrelevant, unloved, and from a political sense, and a backbencher. Really, you know, somebody who was a former celebrity, but not an insider. The reason it was Anne Widdecombe and not Cyril Smith, a man with thousands of enemies by the time he died. There would have been thousands of times the motivation for somebody to do this to a Cyril Smith
than to an Anne Widdecombe. And yet it didn't happen. And it didn't happen in a time when MPs had far less security. And the reason it didn't happen is the establishment looks after someone like Cyril Smith, and someone like Anne Widdecombe is basically a civilian, and chaotic things can happen to them. But that is just the way it is. Having this conversation in an earnest sense, as many people are doing, is completely misguided, because all you do is end up repeating all of the different heuristics and logos of, not logo, all the different heuristics of your enemies.
Mm.
But I don't know. Shall we move on to a bit more of the conversation, or is there anything else you want to have?
No, we'll just crack on with some of the other links we've got here.
We'll crack on, because we've got a bit more to cover in the last half, the second half of the stream. But the greatest piece, I think, of sensationalism, of consistent sensationalism, since the year 2000, has been the counter-jihad narrative.
Yes.
It has been the narrative surrounding the quote-unquote post-9/11 world, the war on terror, all of that. One of our most stringent predictions for all of this stuff was that this paradigm would come back. That it actually had to come back.
And, I mean, this is something you wanted to mention sort of throughout this latter thread here as well, that, again, your citizen journalists that are playing up to the algorithm and the economic incentives in front of them engage in sensationalism when they go to these hotel audits and they go, well, look, there's one guy's got a Quran and the other guy told me they have Kalashnikovs. So obviously the Iranians are bringing weapons into Britain through migrant hotel centres or whatever.
We can do it in either order. But before we go into the, I don't know, I've been trying to explain, people ask me about the Muslim thing all the time. Because are you like Nick Griffin and that you want people to fuse with the Muslims? Or are you like Tommy Robinson and that you think that the Muslims are the problem and they need to be focused on and all of this? It's just like, well, no, I don't think they actually matter as much as is made out.
No,
their presence does, but them as a group and their wants, their needs, and their internal logic don't really.
But then
they could be any group.
It's something we have talked about continuously before as well. The moment you try to turn around and solve the problem by referring to the entire majority of them as Muslims, it breaks down. You're a guy that's come over from Egypt to study, you know, nuclear physics or to become a dentist is not the same aspect of the Muslim world as some Afghani or Pakistani hill farmer. These people are both problems for us in our way of life in different fashions. Trying to treat them all with the same brush by saying that your Saeed Qutb's the same as Axel Rubik, these people are not the same. They are doing fundamentally different things. And by trying to just tarnish this all with terrorism or insurgency as a label gives the powers that be the perfect sort of opportunity to frame this entire conversation and therefore frame every possible solution that must spring forth.
Well, we had it up there, but it's been lying in a blender. But since you brought up the audit thing, I thought I might as well talk about that now. The outgrowth of that is that you do have a lot of people running around like headless chickens with their phones out. It is the, you know, I saw a suspicious seagull and decided to follow it on the... It's one step away from phone-wielding schizophrenic a lot of the time. And to a lot of people, it's indistinguishable. And this whole citizen audit thing, again, is a complete misunderstanding. It's this idea that you can, you know, bring something to light and that it will change something.
That's changes
everything. And so people have become their own little mini sensationalism machines. It shows you that if you remove the mainstream press, people will erect in mourning a monument to it. They will become it.
Yeah, and it will become more ridiculous. It almost becomes a parody of what the press we used to take out of mainstream media when it was like CNN making fun of Trump like 10 years ago.
Sir, I'm just asking questions. We're here with the camera. Don't you answer our questions with the camera? And it is, it's, you know, we of course are proud, intrepid journalists as portrayed, by the thumbnail here. And as the snaff of the Daily Sneed, put some Sneed in your feed.
I am the Sneditor at large.
Sneditor at large of the Daily Sneed, yes. As the Sneditor, can I just say that we are real journalists, in quotes, and running around with your phone going, excuse me, I heard they were housing migrants here, excuse me, Doesn't do anything.
Thought about putting the phone down, going to these migrant hotels, and telling them about the good news of the nation of Israel?
yes, of course. I think we've still got it here. We are still somewhat. We've got the sensations in the corner there because of the sensational stream, but we are still sponsored by Bibi Beans, God's Chosen Legume.
Well, thank you, Benjamin Netanyahu and Curtis Yarbin.
Yes.
for being supporters of our stream.
But I think the ordering thing is the greatest, like the biggest outgrowth of this that I've seen, and that people have become their own sensationalists. They become their own muckrakers. They have become their own intolerable journalists. The whole citizen journalist thing, it's like being a citizen pedophile. You know how bad journalists are? I would never, like, knowingly... Why would you knowingly become a journalist?
And fundamentally, I think as well, given the way that we can see how the narrative always turns out, I mean, there was a few folk doing this talking point earlier on Twitter about how, well, if we just had arms like the Americans, the grooming gangs would have stopped. Oh, my God. You can tell the subtext, the meta-narrative here clearly is that American and Israeli forces want to put us in a state of psychological humiliation. So don't run around the streets of Manchester or Birmingham or somewhere else that's deprived with a GoPro or an iPhone or whatever else.
Weird decline porn for Americans who live in a country that has 7 or 8 times the rapes we do because they are a nation of heavily armed cowards who just live with the ape situation. And when you bring it up, they become irrationally angry and tell you that the apes don't count.
But the fundamental aspect here is, and it's something that as I move away from trying to associate with things that are based, with things that are uber right-wing, I find it hilarious how the new class of people who are all supposed to be that position, the number of them who attribute agency to people who do not deserve it in any way, shape or form, the number of people who will attribute agency to the individual that's done this to Anne Widdecombe. They will assume that this person is responsible for their own actions.
Not only responsible, that they made a self-actualized ideological decision based on an input of logical factors rather than the fact that we live in an open-air asylum now.
Yeah. We've got a few chats
we do.
Here.
The bill of thank you for the $20 there.
Cthulhu Rise. Panama Hat has great taste in music. We have Panama Hat himself, who's chucked as a tenor. When you think about it, it's insane that Cyril Smith never got his head caved in with a hammer, given what he was up to and how public his profile was. He was just one of the fish in the big pond, though, at the end of the day. And Cthulhu Rise again, with another $10. Do we stop participating in politics entirely, or do we get extremely active in local politics, or both? That is a decision you have to make for yourself, given how appropriate it is for you to be able to influence decision-making in your local area. If it's sewn up and you're not a millionaire, don't bother. It's probably the wisest option.
That's funny. Yes. Assume there is some kind of agency. Yes. If you assume an agency rather than agency, what you're doing is better analysis.
Yes. Yes.
Not agency. An agency.
Three-letter agencies. But that's one that continues to boggle my mind. It goes to show that sort of liberal bias that people maintain despite how far they think they've gone into whatever ideology or a dictator is the flavour of the week that week. We think this guy's so cool and he's so base because he killed hundreds and thousands of people, but yes, do you believe those people had agency, though?
We talked about the quantum small hat paradox before.
Mm.
Speaking of agency, again, infinite agency is applied to the Muslim population as well. They are the quantum Haji paradox, in that they are simultaneously a threat and a burden.
Schrodinger's immigrant.
Yes. They are either more organized and competent and ruthless than we are, aka they're going to take over narrative, or they are wretched, disorganized, and useless, aka they're claiming all the benefits narrative. And the second one is the truth. We've talked about this again at length. We did the stream The Mayflies.
Tron. In which we went into the fact that actually these people are a burden. Massively. When was the last time you were actually stopped in the street by a Muslim for acting un-Islamic?
I mean, and I think there's an important point to make here as well. These people are not just a burden upon us. They are a burden upon themselves.
Yes, it's the classic line, they are not us, we are not them, and that is the whole problem. Mm. It doesn't matter which specific flavour of not us they are. They are not us, we are not them, and importing them by the million, even if they were hypothetically from some, you know, immigrant country, because people haggle with it. We've done the Sikhs, people even...
The based Hindus.
The based Gurkhas. No one would care if they were from Nepal. No. No, stupid. Are not us. We are not them. And because they are not us, they have worse health than we do. They have lower intelligence than we do. They are less able to exist in the modern world than we are. Again, it's this narrative of, yes, this wretched, inbred, 70 IQ underclass that lives on benefits and exists in ghettos where the rubbish doesn't get picked up is going to take over.
Mm.
And again, it's the bottom. Oh, well, they'll tick over at 51% and then they'll be in charge.
But as you say, these populations only exist here on the continuous therapeutic teat of what is now the British government. It basically spends a considerable portion of every waking day making sure that these people can be facilitated in some way here. The effort that they have to go to maintain them here means, in a certain sense, you don't need to sit and talk about remigration every day on the internet. Because at the end of the day, the moment the lecky and the food and the water runs out, these people will be gone in a moment's notice.
Oh, yes.
Actual live capture on screen.
No, it's not on screen. I've got it covered up.
No, I suppose it isn't.
Well, the Telegraph is a great one of this because it provides boomers with sensationalist, you know, titillating. Mm. It's the titillating stories. It's straight bananas all the way down. EU straight bananas bonkers. Bradford NHS recruits nurse to help cousin marry families. Hospital trust workable support close relative parents despite calls to ban practice. Well, there's this slop. But this slop exists, you know, this effectively Muslim rage bait exists right next to this, which is basically them going, ooh, scary, scary white-only communities. Well, you wouldn't want a white-only community, would you? You know, Muslims are inbreeding with your tax dollars, but don't you dare try to separate. Yeah, yeah.
The Telegraph would have you believe that one of these is a fifth column as much as the next is.
Yes. Whereas... neither really are fifth columns. One's a wretched group with its hand out, and the other is an American security operation that isn't really doing anything or going anywhere.
To be fair, I wouldn't quite describe that, because some of the people involved in that Woodlander Initiative are actually decent folk, unlike some of the other things that go on in this regard. But I think again, in the same way they turn around and go, Anne Widdecombe's murder has been treated as a counter-terror issue, and having the IRGC... be prescribed as a terrorist group all within the same minute, running these two articles next to each other on your website, you're obviously meant to come to a conclusion that, I should see these people in the same light.
Well, it's knocking the edges off. Both, what does this add up to? It adds up to establishment Cameronism. It adds up to centre-right, centre-left consensus politics. No, we don't want burdening, but also you can't be a white separatist. The Browns are inbreeding on your money. Look at it. It's happening right now, but you can't do anything about it. Oh, well. And it's this interaction here where you end up with... it's a learned helplessness machine, really.
Yes.
It's meant to titillate. It's meant to drive people round and round and round in circles. It's meant to have you stand there like an idiot with your phone out going, I heard this was the unit for are you the inbreeding nurse? Well, no, they did. It doesn't need auditing. They do these things openly.
Mm.
You are actually just going, excuse me, am I being humiliated? Are you humiliating me? I'm being humiliated. Oh no, I'm being humiliated again. It's that. It's you going out as someone who looks like a semi-schizophrenic and seeking out humiliation.
I mean, I think another important aspect to this as well that gets into the next little set of links we've got here is that they fully take advantage of the fact that they give you half of the story and have already psychologically primed you to trying to assume what the other half is.
Yes.
So we had this story back in early May of three women's bodies being found on Brighton Beach on an early morning. Now, if we go to the next post we've got here, now, I've had a look for some of these posts. A lot of people who did post them at the time have deleted them, I presume, because they know what's happened. But what have we got here? We've got three black women unfortunately drowning off the sea in Brighton because they can't swim. But then we've got someone called Angry Bootneck, who's a patriot, who's talking about how this is a tragedy and that this is something to do with, after Southport, can you blame people for being numb to them? This is just a wash with irony. And the number of people when this story broke...
Back in May, you had people speculating on people are going missing in Brighton. Does this have to do with other Brighton stories?
It's the grooming gangs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's those dangerous...
I'm just asking questions.
And it's ultimately embarrassing. I don't think the natural instinct for people when they see a story like this should be to attribute it to something else.
No.
Because what you do is you create an environment whereby there's more talk about this event than there otherwise
needs
to be.
It's even in the article here. Yeah. An inquest has opened into the deaths of three sisters in the sea off Brighton, which the coroner is saying she hopes will stop social media speculation over the tragedy. There was a rightoid, in quotes, speculation about the fact that there may be a murder on the loose. There was a leftoid one about safeguarding and, you know, is there enough signage and things like that. It's, again, it's all things to all people, but this had a huge speculation bubble around it. And it is really them doing the work for, you know, the media. It's you doing the work for the media if you're doing this. If you're sat there going, is there a murder on the loose?
Because let's say they are actually in the situation. And most times,
what are they hiding from us?
Oh yeah, no. Let's imagine they are actually in a situation often with these sort of, you know, the Anne Widdecombe thing, this or any other story, where they don't have the complete narrative. Yeah. So they do give you part of it, knowing the fact that you are going to sow the seeds for you believing something that's not true because you're out there searching it for it yourself. Because you've got to know. I've got to be the first person to post and break the story. I've got to make sure I spell Axel Rubik exactly correctly every time, so I look formal and official. When half of these people, at the end of the day, if they were doing the job properly, would be flirting with a contempt of court charge, and you'd never hear from them again.
It is all so tiresome.
I mean, remember Axel Ribena? Remember all the conversation about that? What came of that? But what came of that is all this wind and fury and noise and sound and anger.
I forgot there was a Southport inquiry going on.
Well, I thought Keir Starmer was an evil man that hated us all and blocked this from happening, so we never knew what was going to happen about
it. No, that was the Grooming Gangs inquiry. But I thought that had a report. Oh no, that was a private one and was a bit embarrassing. We don't talk about the Grooming Gang report anymore. Yeah, remember the sensation? Remember when the Grooming Gang report changed everything?
Yeah. So what has this changed? Now we have to have a greater focus on the misdiagnosis of autism in foreign populations and that being used as an excuse for the unruly behaviour. That it was the miscomings of different services which are not fully joined up and therefore schools and child protection and care associations all now need to be...
It's got mentions of autism in it. Autism's mentioned 7 times. Schools are mentioned 4 times. There's no mention of safeguarding in there. That's a miracle.
Because that would actually be a suggestion of policy, wouldn't it? At least within their own language.
Not one single body assumed... Again, it's a meh. Oh, well, it's a number of complex factors. Mm. Well, you see...
If we really engaged in multivariate analysis.
What they're doing is they're engaged... It's the minutiae. It's what happened when this 50 IQ monster person interacted with the British system, rather than why wasn't this 50 IQ monster person removed from the British system immediately?
Key Buckley in the chat has absolutely nailed it on the head. The result of the inquiry, we failed, Rubica, whatever his name is.
How we failed. We all failed. When a child becomes a murderer, It is a failure of all of us, because it is a failure of our society. But that's this. All those people asking for an inquiry, this is why we jumped up and down and got a bit angry and were like, why are you people so retarded to an extreme degree? But when you don't get some, when sensationalism wears people's ears out, it becomes what you coined, which is completely correct, which is what is no longer revelation becomes normalization, because yes, that's how learned helplessness works.
And we have these minimum viable tragedies.
Yes.
We have events that are, in some cases, genuine tragedies. You don't get the full story about because they want to drip feed it to you, because they want to keep you on your toes for weeks at end. We have these other situations whereby nothing really happens and they're blown up into bigger tragedies because they want to create that same effect.
Yeah.
They want you engaged and listening and watching and talking about it, because then it feels like you're doing something.
Well, there's also, like, the news picks and chooses what it portrays. And the it's a great example. It's actually just the Iran stuff. The media and the public get fatigued. Doesn't matter how big the story is. Like, America is currently actually getting physically kicked out of the Middle East right now. A large amount of their equipment is being blown up on the ground right now. The military situation is degrading further than it did back when it was 24-hour coverage right now. But because that's an old story, the Strait of Hormuz is closed again, is it? Donald Trump is threatening 15 levels of nuclear apocalypse war in 3 seconds, he promises.
Mm.
Any more update on Ann Widdicombe? Well, why Andy Burnham's train's moving again?
And I think the thing as well, though, particularly with these narratives on the domestic front, and it's a note you've got at the end here that this does not sow radicalization. This does not breed dissent. What it does is instill learned helplessness and make people complicit. This is why we have always, for ages now, advocated that we would rather people be just wholeheartedly apathetic and just separate themselves from it.
Doing nothing would be better than this.
Yeah, I mean, the disutility of sensationalism just seems to want to go completely misunderstood by everyone. There is about maybe a dozen or so people that I see make any sort of effort to actively avoid these things when they happen.
One of the reasons we did that, again, I recommend you to watch, if you've never seen it, our stream on the White March stream that we did, is meant to be anti-sensationalism. It's meant to show you that there is no story big or horrific enough to wake a nation up, in quotes. And it's the same thing here. There is nothing, no news narrative big enough, in quotes, to wake a nation up. And in fact, the higher the political temperature within the news narrative, within the hyper-reality of the sensational headline, the less chance people have of doing anything, because they're still engaged in it. If they're engaged in a narrative process surrounding Axel Banana, they are not engaged in any useful organization that might change the immediate area.
No, but Elon Musk shared this post on Twitter. It's going to change everything. Oh, my God. Ah! Stop being fucking consent manufacturing for Israeli security tech. I mean, it's like you can just not do that. You cannot be on Twitter engaging in nonsense under the proviso that we need a census, we need security systems, we need this, we need that to help protect what our leaders in charge and our chosen special lobby.
Well, it's what you have here is a series of fight or flight news stories that come in rapid succession. And there's a second aspect to that, in that you can choose to attach yourself to each in turn, or make something your own personal JFK, or I guess now the benchmark is Charlie Kirk, because we'll have Charlie Kirk magic bullet videos in 20 fucking
years.
You two
can be, yeah, John Mappin, and you can speculate about how Charlie Kirk is a time traveler.
Or you can turn something into your and follow it down this ecosystem, like, infinite rabbit hole.
No, what if the police aren't telling us the real story?
Yeah.
Because Charlie Kirk came back to save Ann Widdicombe from the far left.
And then he was killed again. Many do both, attaching to a pet titillating narrative during the downtime between new arcs. But there's enough here, both in terms of depth and breadth, of content put out, in quotes, of narrative material, especially with LLMs now. That's what it's allowed people to do, is fill in some of that empty space. There is no dead air.
Excuse me, we need common sense Marxist Hammerman control now. This is clearly what we have to do to solve this problem.
Excuse me, he does not have a patch on Hammerman, the drill legend.
No, but I think you don't understand we really need to do is re-emphasize the need for equality and meritocracy so that this can't happen again.
I would like to apologize to Hammerman in his ends for Evelyn comparing that Reddit gimp to him.
Is this not the whole thing, though? Does it not just feel like...
The Reddit Hammer...
The Reddit Hammer gimp.
Yeah.
I mean... Does it not just feel like a fucking joke? How many people are out there that read that? Why is their first thing to assume that that's true? What, because it confirms your biases? And that you just want to, like, see the world as the cartoon drawings that you take the piss out of every other day? I can't actually empathise with people who want to believe this stuff. I don't think they believe it. I think they want to believe it.
Yes. Yes, they do. But it allows them to exist in this constant... It's like the search for content. I think a lot of people have put themselves in this mindset where they are the news filterer. The collapse in confidence in mainstream news has created a situation in which people think they are positive for going around and collecting their own news. But as someone who has done that basically for the past 20 years... Doing so is a great way to lead yourself down rabbit holes. Mm. And really what you want to do is say that it tells you nothing. Like we've talked about before, that we talked about, you know, all the lies and all of that, about the immigrant center story that wasn't an immigrant center, and it really, it's about condemned buildings and all narratives. What was that stream called where we did that? Basically just about many layers of lies that are involved in the modern world. But I just can't remember what entitled that one. But it is something we've talked about repeatedly, is that a lot of the time people's instinct will be to believe the opposite of a news story rather than to understand that the news story itself might not contain any relevant information to them, and they would be better almost wholly disregarding it.
Yes, and the extent to which you give these things legitimacy by trying to counter them as if they are legitimate as opposed to just completely disregarding them.
You should reject 99% of what you see in media of any form out of hand.
Mm.
You should let it pass you by. You should not let it take up your mental bandwidth.
Unless you are doing what we do, which is the occasional sort of perusing to go, what do they want me to think? What do they actually want me to think and say?
Research like that takes a lot. That's why a lot of the time we'll come out with a judgment on something deliberately weeks and months after it's happened, because it does take that much time to sift through and find some nuggets that are worthwhile. Because most of what we have right now, the nuggets that are falling out are mostly dry and boring numbers about how steep the decline is. And dry and boring numbers that add up to something that's quite funny about how, you know, it's like America's wearing 50 pair of pants and each is being pulled down in turn. But it's also like the British economy and the British state is also wearing 50 types of pants that are being pulled down repeatedly. It's funny. You know, it's funny to watch these people fail and run around in certain ways, but... All we are dealing with here is decline, inexorably. It's not collapse, not yet. The water still comes out the tap. And while the water still comes out the tap and the food is still in the shops, you will still be stuck in this sensationalism cycle in which people subsume themselves in things outside of their daily needs because their daily needs are largely met. A lot of leftists think we live in a post-scarcity world. We don't. But if you are... lower middle class in some form, upward, even if you're some degree of benefits class in Britain, most people in Britain, in fact, not almost all, it's difficult in Britain to starve. And so you have to have sensationalism in this manner that allows people to be titillated, that isn't to do with people's immediate needs, because people's immediate needs are escaping drudgery. What you're having here is really the use, as you said, a huge percentage of people engage with distant politics, in quote, as entertainment. I mean, I know it's in many ways, yes, 90, our audience too. To most people, we're here to entertain them.
Mm.
That is it. Some of you believe that by watching us, you're engaging in political activism. You're not, by the way. just to burst, you're not engaging in political activism. You know, no matter how hard edge you think we might be, we are not engaging in political activism by consuming this content. What we really try to do is just bring the temperature down, is to bring some form of clarity for us and for you. And if you've had an attending, that's great. But if you can use that to filter the world better, that's on you. But that's really all we can really do.
Yes.
We can't actually go out there and wrangle the machine, in quotes, and bring justice for Anne Widdecombe. It is not within our power. We'd never pretend to be able to.
Yes. And I want to stress that it does not come from a place of cold-heartedness or a want to pretend that things are okay to advise people not to engage with this stuff. I say it because I think people should actually live their own lives, and that's probably a lot more important thing to do at the moment than worry about things on Twitter and work out how you and your mates are going to start the next hottest news aggregator or the next political party platform or the next polling outlet or somewhere that does immigration statistics or whatever. Just sack it off and go live your bloody life. When the opportunity to actually do something arises, you will know about it, and you won't need people on the internet like us to tell you when that is.
No. But anyway, I will double check and make sure we haven't missed any more super chats, but I don't think we have. Thank you to everyone who donated. Thank you to everyone for coming here. Thank you, Panama Hat, for the handoff. You should go see his content, and his radio show was very good. Mr. Panama Hat does indeed have pretty good taste in the musics. Well, we'll try and make these slightly more regular. I'm trying to get some music set up here. There we go. We'll try and make this a little bit more regular. We've got, I don't know, we only want to say things when it's worth actually saying them. But for now, what we will say is goodbye.
Goodbye.
Actually, sorry, for those of you who don't know, I'll be delivering a lecture on August 1st in Stevenage. The link is in the description below. I understand it's been quite oversubscribed, but you know what? I can just build this in here during the music outro. Sorry, there is a link down below. I will be speaking. I completely forgot to put that in for I Am Derpy, and we put these together and trying it through them in some nice short order. But for if you're watching this in the past, I'm sorry you missed it. But yes, I do have a speaking engagement, and you can check that out in the link below.